श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नित्य नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषस्तुंग भारी फस्क शादी सुचारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्रीरे सागराधा शिवास्वी गो भक्त वृंदम हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे इस्कॉन फ्रॉम द चार्टर्ड प्रभुपाद की सो टुडे आई वांटेड टू स्पीक अ लिटिल बिट अबाउट Siddhanta, about goals, aims. There's a really wonderful article in this recent BTG by Sati Maharaj where he is expressing some very interesting considerations, and as in many of his writings, helping people to look a little closer at what is going on in their life and their mind, while always keeping the ultimate goal of Krishna consciousness forefront. And so some discussions are taking place in many circles in connection with the article, which is good. So I wanted to speak a little bit about goals, not just the ultimate goal, which is obviously there for us. The ultimate goal, of course, of the devotee is the devotee wants to become an unalloyed servant of the Supreme, of Krishna. The devotee wants to return back home to the spiritual world. The devotee wants to regain his or her original identity and to be absorbed in one's original activity and service to Krishna. First, when we talk about goals, yesterday and the day before, we were, which is also goal orientation, we were in Philadelphia, and we had an interesting two-day workshop on embracing love in contrast to fear, releasing or freeing ourselves from fear and embracing love. And so after the workshop, or the seminar, really more of a seminar, I had a chance to meet with several people. And a very exciting meeting with one of my god sisters, Sangeeta, who lives in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia. And she is a nurse, but particularly trained now in hospice care. And so her and her husband, Ramadev, they shared with us and a very awesome proposal where about 12 or so devotees, and I'm sure more, but have formally come together to embark upon a really wonderful project, which will be shared in a few weeks, or literally almost a few days, with the international GBC body. And the idea is to establish a hospice here in America that would facilitate devotees as they make their transition. And so there is already some funding that is being put together, mainly by some of the devotees on the West Coast, and several devotees in different parts of the country who are nurses or doctors or have even some specific training in hospice care. And the meditation, which we were happy to hear about, was to do this in Giranagari. And so the idea would be to help to fulfill so much of what Srila Prabhupada wanted and many things that you and all of us have discussed, Giranagari being the hospital for the heart, addressing the basic needs of the devotees in terms of focus on community development, with much of a social, spiritual orientation. And so I was very excited to see how serious the proposition is, and excited in understanding that if something like this could be established, how it would act as a catalyst for other places in the world, as well as other places in America, to arrange such a facility. And I guess it's similar to what's happening in the secular world. You know, now the baby boomers are quite active in America. And so many things are changing, and a lot of what's changing is a little more emphasis on old age care and acceleration, because such a large populace of Americans are in that generation, have facility, have finance, etc. And so as devotees are gradually becoming older, and we, in many cases, joined when we were teenagers, then there is a healthy meditation on putting certain things like this into place. So there's almost a dozen of Prabhupada disciples who are working as a team, nurses, caretakers, some one accountant, and some financial connections to make this happen. So it'll be offered to the GBC, not in terms of so much asking for advice or assistance, but mainly offered to the GBC for blessings and to help the international body to be aware of what will take place. And so there's a strategy, a plan of what is expected to happen in the next year, the next couple of years. Basically, it's going to involve, of course, building a facility and arranging for hands-on caretakers, as well as training up other devotees to be able to do such, and then making the knowledge, of course, along with that, making the knowledge available to the various temples, that when someone is in such need, that there will be facilitation for them. So this is the plan in this initial phase. Perhaps we can put it on the board and you can look at it, and we'll all be discussing this. But I think it's exciting that devotees have come together to try to brainstorm in such a way, and that several have thought that Gita Nagari would be the ideal place. And of course, if yourselves are in agreement, then of course we would offer, make the land available, and they would bring in the finances to do the building and the people, along with some of you who could assist in this effort also. So I think this is wonderful that we try to be more the servant of the servant in such a way. As this is our goal is to prepare ourselves in good consciousness to make that transition. And so it's almost ironic that so much of our life is based on that, and we don't have facilities for doing such at the last effect of one's life. That it seemed like it would be one of the most and there's an issue now that there's, you know, there's a scarcity of nurses, and the experts say that this will be such for many, many years in America. It's a nice area for devotees to enter into, where they can facilitate the caring of the body, the mind, and the soul, and particularly give directions to people at a point in their life when they are most in need of such knowledge and understanding and such care. So we hope more devotees will also consider along with the kind of discussion we're going to have today, as people look at goals in their lives, that perhaps some devotees may consider this kind of goal, at least temporary goal, as we move toward the ultimate goal. So this is in the spirit of some of the immediate goals that we'd like to see take place in Radha Damodar's kingdom here. Now, we know that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells us to always to think of him, We see in the 12th chapter how Krishna tells us, first, foremost, most significant, ultimate goal in our existence is to always think of the Lord, never forget the Lord, to do all things in the spirit of thinking of what will be pleasing to Krishna. But ultimately, this is the platform of the Nitya Siddha, where there is never any other thinking other than that, totally in a line with that of Krishna, or that of a Siddhanta Siddha, or of a pure person. So, as most entities are not on that particular level, Krishna doesn't say, there's no hope for you, or there is nothing that you have that you can be about because you are simply a failure. But he explains, so if we are not always able to think of him, then we should engage in sadhana bhakti, we should engage in the activities that will engage the senses, engage the mind, where we are preparing ourselves or arranging so that we can always be thinking of Krishna. And so we have, you know, this process. Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Swana. The different tenets that we do in our day-to-day life, our practices, our rituals. But Krishna also, it's clear that so many souls are not prepared to do that. And he explains then we should engage in what? In working for him or helping those who are always thinking of him, or those who are engaged in following the process of sadhana bhakti. So if we're not able to do it ourselves, by first always thinking, or by being absorbing our senses, along with trying to absorb our mind more and more, then we should take notice of those who are, and we should either facilitate that effort as we help them in doing the work for Krishna by ourselves, working now in such a way. As a team player for those who are more directly fully absorbed or fully involved in the process of following the principles of devotional service. But Krishna says, if somehow we're not ready to do that one, he doesn't say you must run away, you are a failure, there's no hope for you. He says, then you're not ready to do my work or help those who are doing my work, then you do your own work. But you do it without being attached. You do it as best as you can in a detached way. And he understands that many will not even want to do that because they feel that it is impossible, too difficult for them, or their desires of such a nature, they are not ready to align themselves in such spirit. And Krishna says then, you meditate on me, you acquire knowledge, etc., etc. And this is Krishna himself who's letting us know, think of me. But if that is not what you're ready to do, because by thinking of me, you will be fully absorbed in me, you'll be worshiping me, I'll be working through you, we'll be fully in touch, because there'll be no illusion, no ahankara, there'll be no vaya, no fear, no false ego, there'll be no kama, there'll be no krodha, there'll be no mohan, there'll be no nas, there'll be none of these enemies of the mind, because the mind is thinking of me. And it is not being distracted as it is thinking in terms of anger, krodha, or in terms of lust, kama, or in terms of enviousness. These are all areas where the mind is not thinking of Krishna because some part of the mind is being pulled to other directions, other areas, other categories. But still, some desire for Krishna is there, and Krishna is arranging. So if you're not able to fully present your mind to me, to receive me in full, then here is a way how we can still be together gradually. Still you're moving toward me, still you're under my general care. As the Lord says, everyone is on his path. As we surrender, he rewards accordingly. So whether we are ready to think of Him fully, whether we are to help those who are, or we're engaged in reflecting by trying to acquire knowledge, understand more about the essence of that, or whether we're impersonalists or even atheists, we are still on the Lord's path, and He will reciprocate in some way, according to what we are thinking and what we are doing. So we ourselves have to be careful in being myopic, in considering that if someone is just working for Krishna, that there's no hope for them, or that they're a failure, it means that they are doing just that. They are working for Krishna or assisting others who are trying to serve Krishna in a more, let us say, more selfless or more surrendered way. We understand the Vanasam Dhamma system, in one sense, can be all summarized in that people have different propensities, different proclivities, different idiosyncratic tendencies, but Krishna is there, and each person can somehow be encouraged to do something based on their propensities, with the understanding that there are ways to do things that will be an offering that we can make to Krishna, based on whatever vana or ashram that one is in. But we also understand, ultimately, that all vanas and ashrams are secondary. Or all vanas and ashrams are a need to something higher. The thing that we recognize that the vanas and the ashrams are reality. They are part of the scheme or the life space, the field where one is active and can be able to offer that to Krishna. However, ultimately Krishna says, Ahamba Masmi, He is emphasizing that we're not these bodies, and so we're not any particular order. Ultimately, the soul is none of those things. And love is not bound by any of those particular categories. It rises and goes far beyond, and is more pervasive than any of those categories, or all of those put together. But they are means, and they can be considered goals, short-term goals. That as somebody is doing something very nice and trying to serve the Lord, and they're basically in the mode of ignorance, then gradually there'll be acceleration to the mode of passion and to the mode of goodness. Or some things we do in the mode of goodness, some things in the mode of passion, and some things in the mode of ignorance. But as there is determination and dedication, as one tries their best, then there will be a natural graduation. And so there is Krishna saying, oh, everyone is on my path. He's saying those who are trying to be transcendentalists, then there are still some modes that can be often interacting upon the person's consciousness. And Krishna says, so if you're not able to always think of me, then here's what you can do. Well, four types of people coming, and you're bringing something, then once you are in the process, you are having some experiences, some realizations, some things that you are trying to aspire for based on consciousness. Krishna says, but come on. Kama sarva kama va moksha kama udabhiti. We see that one may have so many material desires, one may be desiring liberation, but Bhagavatam says still, come to Krishna. Although we hear that Krishna is asking us first to come a certain way, that is definitely there. The mother says, come like this. The teacher says, do like this. Student has a little trouble or less orientation toward that, and the teacher arranges, oh, then do this one, do that one. But still, the ultimate of what is the desire of the teacher, of the parents, of the Lord, must always be kept clear. Otherwise, in the process of just working for the Lord, or working for those who are serving the Lord, or in the process of meditation, or in the process of acquiring knowledge, one can begin to think that the idea of acquiring knowledge is all that Krishna is asking for. No. He's definitely asking for something beyond that. But the same time, he's asking, oh, if you're not able to think of me, then you can do it. Or we begin to think that just following these rules and regulations is all the Krishna is asking for, and we do that mechanically, or we do that with a hard heart, and then we still miss that Krishna really wants us always thinking of him, and so we're doing these things so that we can be lovingly thinking of him by ultimately loving and proper action. So therefore we understand Atahara Payasis Tapagapa Niyamaga, huh? That sometimes there can be even fall down by too much attraction and attachment just to the rules and thinking that that is all you have to do for Krishna. Or there can be fall down in minimizing those rules, but we honor them by also knowing that that is like a prerequisite, but more important is as we honor those, always trying to improve on the quality of our mind culture. So, one can evaluate any teaching, any philosophy, rather quickly, by asking the significant question, what is the siddhanta? What is the ultimate goal? Or what are the highest goals that are attainable by doing or following this? If there is perfection, what is the ultimate goal? And so, whatever theology, philosophy, whatever religion that it is, there's always some specific goals that are to be attained if one is perfect in that. What is having heaven on earth? What is experiencing the energies of the Lord? What is developing certain shaktis of the Lord? Whether it's going to the heavenly kingdom? Whether it's going to paradise? Whether it's going to Vaikuntha? Whether it's going to Vrindavan? And so there is certain activities, certain requirements, but most important, a certain consciousness that is to be associated with a achiever to be able to achieve what that particular goal is. Sometimes people say, can you follow this kind of process and be able to reach Krishna? Well, if it's a certain kind of process, then we look at what is the goal of that, and that goal may have nothing to do with Vaikuntha, with Vrindavan, etc. And so why should one study in one particular class for a degree, and then after getting that degree, expect to get another type of degree? We're studying for a particular certificate or degree, and it's expected if you are a high achiever, or if you sufficiently pass, then you get the degree according to that particular discipline. So one must be clear to inquire, what is the degree that one can receive if they pass or if they succeed in the particular area of study and involvement? We do that in general, in academia. We do that as we're trying to acquire some particular qualification, etc. So surely in spiritual life it should also be there. If you want to know, so this is a teaching, this is a system, what is the ultimate goal if I honor that in its utmost? I follow that, I am successful in that, what is the goal? So sometimes people will be kind of shocked when they find out what the goals are of some of the systems, and perhaps they're not comfortable. But sometimes they are comfortable, and if they're comfortable with what the goal is, they should ask the second question. Second question is, what do I need to do now to acquire that goal? So this is the goal of Buddhism. This is the goal of Taoism. This is the goal of this esoteric system. This is the goal of Christianity. This is the goal of Episcopalian philosophy or Catholicism. This is the goal of this branch of Hinduism. This is the goal of this branch of Buddhism. And so, one should find out and then see if it is what is attractive to them. Now they inquire, what must I do? What is required to attain that goal? And if they're not ready to attain that ultimate goal, then they may ask, how can I get as close to that goal as possible? And they start looking at what things need to be done to get to as close to their goal, since they know what the goal is and they want it, but they're not really ready to do what's all necessary, then they do as best as they can to get as close to that goal as possible, if that is a goal that they are interested in. If they're not interested in that goal, then they should involve themselves in a particular system that they are happy about what their goal is, and now they come as close, or they acquire that goal based on fully committing to it, or as coming as close as possible. But if it is a goal that they want, then they find out what is to be done, and if they're not ready to do it fully, at least they want that goal, so they do what they can do, they're as close as possible. But if they want the goal, and they're okay what has to be done, then according to how much they want to do it, it's up to them. But the third thing they should inquire is, I want to know and hear about, I want to study about those persons who also wanted that goal and did what was necessary and have attained that goal. Because when I attain that goal, ultimately, I am going to have some of the experiences or some of the qualities or some of the attributes as those who have wanted that goal and who have been successful. Now, if we see a goal that we really want, we like what we hear and see about those who acquired that. But if we're not ready to do what's necessary, then we won't embrace or get that same goal until we're able to do what is necessary. Now, if we're not ready to do what is necessary, we have to be honest with ourselves and see if this is actually the goal that we really ultimately want. We don't ultimately want that, then we should do something different and be honest about doing what is necessary to get that or come as close to that, because we really do want it, and it means that in time we are going to try to position ourselves so we can do everything that's necessary for that goal. But if it is a goal that we in no way are at any time going to want to do all the things that's necessary, we should also be honest, and then we should be in a system of where we can do that which is expected, so that at some point we can acquire what ultimately is available based on that particular system. So I think you understand the basic point, is that all religions, philosophy, theology, they have certain goals. And we should be a little clear on what is the goal and what it takes to get that, and some knowledge of those who have acquired it to see if we're comfortable. If we are comfortable, we try our best to do exactly what can acquire that, or we try to come as close to it because of what we really want. And it's a matter of, hopefully a matter of time, to be able to do all that's necessary to get the goal that we in fact want. Now, just as now this thing going on in the world now, you know, is the Olympics. And so many of these athletes, they have had these intense goals for quite a long time in their life. Sometimes when they were small kids, they were being trained or they were being orientated toward becoming very good in a particular discipline, a particular area of athletics. Rare that somebody just overnight just decide that they're going to try to become very good and they're just somehow, by some osmosis, become very excellent in this area. It was by intense focus, determination for a certain goal, and amazing intense practice. I mean, the way some of these athletes have to practice sometimes every single day, some of them for hours and hours, that their whole life becomes centered around that particular activity. They do many things, but their life, their major priority is that skating, the swimming, the track. Everything is centered around that. Their diet, their friends, their work, everything centered around such. And these are just material goals. But in order to reach that goal of somebody thinking that they're going to one day get a gold medal in the Olympics, that they had other temporary short-term goals that have carried them to the point of this ultimate goal. Try to understand that. When you just have a long-term goal without some strategy for short-term goals, your ultimate goal, in most cases, will just be theoretical. That it takes intense day-to-day meditation or some ongoing reflection and some scheme and some strategy that helps us to move by one success to another achievement, to another achievement, to ultimately to that ultimate achievement, or ultimate thing that we want. What I'm trying to suggest is, as Vaishnavas, just to think that we are Vaishnavas and our goal is to become Krishna conscious is not going to make it. Because the mind is very strong and the senses are very strong. And if we don't sufficiently plan, Maya will plan for us. If we do not sufficiently plan and we just take everything day to day without some specific short-term goals, it becomes very hard to reach the ultimate goal. Let me read something from Srila Prabhupada here in the conversation. Srila Prabhupada says, if you have no goal, there is an example. Man without any aim is a ship without any rudder. So suppose if an airplane is going with an aim to land in some country. But if it goes on simply without any aim, then there will be disaster. So without aim, what is the use of practice? Prabhupada is talking to a devotee who left the body, Pitaputra. Pitaputra says, he likes the practice without goals. Prabhupada says, that is foolishness. Without goal, practicing is foolishness. There's an African proverb that if you don't know where you're going, any road will do. One philosopher, Seneca, says, our plans miscarry because they have no aim. When a man does not know what harbor he is heading for, no wind is the right wind. It's like now people are having trouble with parenting. And sometimes there's this relative considerations going on that you let your child do whatever he or she feels. The educational system is based on that. Almost let the child kind of teach himself. But having children and not having some strategy and plan for them, or not giving them some basic ideas, structures, and some technology, and some rules, and some accountability, is like sending a ship out to sea without its rudder or without its engine. And so you are just sending them away with the hope that somehow or other, they're going to be able to get some momentum and some ability to on go, to keep on moving. And you sent them out without the facility so that can happen. Obviously, the parents should recognize the child, the children have intelligence and have personality, and they have ability to be inspired. They should be able to be inspired to act upon some of their tendencies, not that the parent is just overwhelmingly trying to dictate what that child is to do, how they think, how they walk, how they talk, every single moment of what they do. The child will rebel like anything. But at the same time, of putting the children out and letting them do as pretty much whatever they feel, when they want, how they want. Not only will it be like a ship that will be going, just wandering, but ultimately they will become obnoxious entities and they'll even hate the parents who gave them that kind of so-called freedom, which was a sign of a lack of love, a lack of monitoring, a lack of caring, and a lack of using the parents' resources and trying to see somehow how to plan for and with that particular child. We see in the case of Arjuna, like in the Mahabharata, where they were to shoot the eye of the bird. And so one Pandava after another being called to shoot the eye. But why was Arjuna allowed and why did he do such? Because Arjuna had been so trained and had become so focused. And so for him, being able to reach the goal, the ultimate goal that was in consideration then, was not a problem. But he was able to do that because of so much intense practice of reaching certain temporary goals, temporary excellence, that it allowed him to be able now to have this level of focus. I think you see where I'm trying to go and what I'm trying to develop. We're trying to give focus to the fact that we have to be more clever about how serious it is in being in a material body and in a material world, and how we are in Maya's camp, and how the general mental culture will be that they'll be constantly trying to keep us in material energy, and unless we are having ways to harness the mind sufficiently, that we will not reach the ultimate goals that we want to be about. This is why Bhaktivinoda explains that unless one is a Paramahamsa, there must be certain stimulation, satisfaction, and stimulation of the mind that one is satisfied or pleased with. There must be something going on in their mind that is helping the person to feel good about what they're doing, about the environment, about themselves, about the process, etc. Cannot just work and work and work without some ruchi, some taste. You can do that for a while. You can be in an environment and you can just join the temple and you can just do whatever you're told to do for a while. But if somehow you're not having some taste, or for a while you're not having some chance to act upon your own personal goals as you're trying to attain the ultimate goal, there will be some disturbance for most people. Now, we're not trying to introduce an idea that everybody just do whatever they want, and there's anarchy, and that is called spiritual life. That is what has brought down ultimate spiritual culture and produced a lot of religious superficiality. But Krishna gave us always think of him as the ultimate, and then explain what we could do if we're not able to do the ultimate. But the ultimate goal was not taken away, nor was there ambiguity about short-term goals. He made it very clear. This is the ultimate goal. Always think of me. If you cannot do that, then the goal is you follow the practice of devotional service that helps you to come to that point. If you cannot do that one, then you work for me, or you encourage those who are working for me. If you cannot do that, then the goal is you engage in meditation, you engage in the acquiring of knowledge. These were also specific goals given in trying to reach the ultimate goal. So keep in mind, in each case, we're still talking about goals. Whether they're goals that are part of the means and goals toward the ultimate end. And so often, devotees are engaged in devotional service and they are not having some means goals. They're not so much having some short-term goals, and they walk around after a while like zombies. Or they walk around feeling that Christian consciousness is impossible, because as you acquire certain short-term goals, it helps you become more enthusiastic about the next goal and ultimately about the ultimate goal. Because the Olympic champion acquired certain goals by their practice short-term, they became more enthused and more excited and more determined about a longer-term goal, until it got to a point that they're thinking, I want to be the best in the world in this, and I'm practicing and knowing that it is a possibility. So even if they do not get the gold medal, they get the silver, and they're thinking, next year I'm going to get the gold because I got this. So they got a short-term goal, and now they're keeping focus on a longer-term goal, and it becomes more of a reality because they have been successful in the short-term goal. As you acquire the short-term goal, your mind now is more absorbed, your energies are more focused, your faith is stronger because of something that has happened, that is something that is gives you some enthusiasm and some pleasure based on your particular propensities, idiosyncratic tendencies, etc. To the point that we come where we can offer everything to Krishna by always thinking of Krishna. Yes, we hear of the disciple who was wanting to become realized and was asking his guru, and his guru dumped him in the water and explained in the river that until you can develop that kind of intensity where you are just thinking only of a breath of air you can develop that kind of intensity about love of God, then you can acquire that. That is the ultimate goal. And we don't want to ever neglect that this is the ultimate goal of serenity, of full surrender. It is just as much a danger when we minimize, reject, or think the ultimate goal is impossible. It is just as much danger in that side as well as the danger of not having some short-term goals, because in either way it will cause stagnation. We'll become defeated if we think that the ultimate goal is not possible. We rationalize all kind of deviation and accept mediocrity, or even doubt the whole process. And if we're not having success with the short-term goals, our senses and our mind will be so active, because if it's not being harnessed and properly engaged in something that we're enthused about, then we'll become enthused about sense gratification. Why does Rupa Goswami emphasize usaha, enthusiasm, foremost? And why is that? As soon as we become unenthused, that we just begin to go down and down in our actions, our activities, and in our thoughts. We begin to settle right back to what the mind has been doing in so many other previous lifetimes, being a slave to the senses and to the environment. Most important is realizing how important Shraddha, faith, is, and breaking through the modes of material nature. And that means an intense focus. And so that intense focus doesn't just develop perfection overnight. It doesn't develop that kind of intensity overnight. And if it does, in some cases, if someone is coming from a previous life, and so they have this very high level of Atikari because of so much they've done previously to come up to this particular point. So we are just trying to suggest that while we keep the ultimate goal of Krishna consciousness in mind, that each of you, each of us, can look a little closer in our day-to-day life about certain things that we want to achieve or do based on our makeup, based on our particular vana, ashram, based on our particular idiosyncratic propensities, that we try to see how we can reach some specific goals that we can be happy with, that we can be able to offer to community, to Prabhupada, to his mission, to our families, to ourselves. As we do that, we'll find that Maya will not be hunting us and assaulting us to such a level because the mind is not occupied or one is not having something they can be enthused about. And each person has to look closer at themselves to make an investigation of where they are and what they can do and what enthuses them so that they can go on and on and on in their devotional service for the ultimate goal. The course, Srila Prabhupada, I was giving an example of once we were trying to distribute his books, standing orders, and we had come to him with our pens and pencils and papers to get very specific instructions. And Srila Prabhupada just told us, so you just do your best and Krishna will help you. So sometimes we do get a general instruction, or we get general feedback from the environment. But now it's on us to take that and to imbibe that, to make it more specific based on what we can do, that we can offer based on a particular goal. Probably each of you, if you think about it, you can see the times that you're happiest in your Krishna consciousness when somehow your mind is in action about something that you're trying to do, trying to arrange, trying to do that you can offer in your devotional life. Some plan. You are happy when it could be of all different varieties, but something that you are thinking about, and you're thinking about it in the sense of yourself as a devotee and what you are trying to arrange, there is a certain amount of harnessing of the mind. I find myself, when I'm not having some focus on some goals, my mind is crazy all over the place. And one can feel very insignificant, one can feel very depressed, one can feel angry, one can feel lonely, all kinds of things happen in the mind. So that is the nature of the mind. It is some composition. And you can see, when you are planning, organizing, doing something with the mind, and you are happy about it, and it's something that you can see as a goal, that somehow the one gets energized, you can do so many things. And it varies. When someone says, well, what is my goal if I'm living in the temple and my service is deity service and I am not having a husband? To see by the time the year is over that I have organized 3 new dresses for the deity. That we have specific goals that's a part of the devotional culture based on something that we individually are ready to put our energies into to see it follow through, to see it happen. And if we do this, it moves us more and more towards the ultimate goal, because first, we will feel so much more excited about Christian consciousness, because every day we'll have certain things that we are looking and doing towards this goal that we're trying to embrace, we're trying to accomplish. The mind is too dangerous just to let it do or let it loose. The mind and the environment is too challenging and too threatening. So we have to be more alert and to take more power within ourselves to be able to reach the goal, the ultimate goal. You see, especially with some of our younger people, I see it so much with our Gurukula kids, that they have been born in this society and they are part of the devotional environment day after day, month after month, year after year. And all they are being constantly hearing is the ultimate goal is that you are to be a pure devotee. While they're seeing a lot of stuff around them and are getting bored by this ultimate goal that seems so far away and so ambiguous to them. But if some of those same kids could have some short-term things that they can do, they can put the energy into things they can try to achieve, then they will feel much more comfortable in going on year after year in the devotional culture and ultimately also trying to embrace the ultimate goal. They have to feel some excitement, some adventure, some achievement, and then they can be ready for the next, for the next. Look at our own life. We all know this, but we're just not thinking about it so much. We all see. We're planning. We're planning for, you know, the Rath Yatra. We're planning for a new dress for the deities. We're planning to fix up your cabin, your house, your this or that. You're trying to, you know, get some new things for your altar. You see that as you are doing and planning and having some goal about something, that life becomes so much richer for you. But notice what happens when you're just going from day to day, and you just get up and you chant and you come to the temple, or you stay at home, or you do this and you do that, and you just maintain the body, and you are a devotee. Yes, but you will not be happy unless there are some particular things that you yourself want to be able to do, that you can identify with it and be able to have that as a part of your life or as a part of a short-term goal that is something that you align yourself with. So in conclusion, so I don't want to, you know, beat a dead horse, beat the horse to death. You should be redundant. But Carmen's got an amazing saying. Kill 2 birds with 1 stone. Beat the horse to death. Or beat the horse. Well. But we understand that. As the mind is so powerful, we have to sort of trick it, we have to engage it. If we don't engage it, it will engage us. So just look a little closer at your own propensities. What things you feel excited about? You are a devotee. This is your life. Now look a little closer at the kind of devotee you are in terms of what things are enthusing to you. You may be the kind of devotee that you feel so excited by bhajans and kirtans. And so now, learn the harmonium. Learn some songs. By the next 4 months, see that you have learned such and such songs that you can be able to sing to the deity. You can be able to sing as you absorb yourself more in the process of devotion. You may be the kind of devotee who you just have so much affection for serving your personal deity. Then you find more and more ways of how you can tune yourself in to more of a personal relationship with your particular deity. And you push yourself in certain ways for certain things that you feel that you like to have experienced, you like to achieve by particular time. Push yourself, make yourself more accountable. You may be the type of devotee, you're very dramatically oriented. And so you take a certain amount of time that you learn so many slokas, and so by the end of the year, you're going to want to know so many slokas, you want to know so many pujas, and so you push yourself in this way of committing your mind and your body in such a way that this can enthuse you as you're trying to reach that higher goal. Maybe the kind of devotee that you want to learn more and more how you can do seminars and workshops so that you can be able to agitate your mind and how you can be able to serve the community, how you can give Krishna consciousness. So you make plans that you want to study and learn this so that at a certain point, 2 years, 3 years, that you can be doing like this. Now, I'm so passionate about this because I see, you know, what's happening in many environments, and I see what's happening to myself, because I can see, you know, I look like years and years and years, and I think, you know, Prabhupada's mercy, I'm going on each year enthusiastic, but I'm realizing that I keep on having these short-term goals. And therefore, you have these short-term goals, you finish that goal, and now, you know, it's not just a matter of just doing something for the sake of doing it, but it's a matter of something that you can genuinely feel that you can involve yourself in and that you can offer and share some value to others. You can share some, offer some value to your spiritual master. And as you do that, then even though you have setbacks and problems and financial problems and health problems and personality problems, they're just that. Because there's a part of you that is focused on something that's higher, something that's very distinct, something that you're excited about and trying to do that, acquire that, and you realize that it's possible because you've already acquired and achieved some of your previous goals, and now you're ready for some bigger goals and bigger goals towards the ultimate of always thinking of Krishna. So I would like to, when I'm leaving in a few days, I'll go through this operation, I'll come back. Doctor said it should take a 3 months before I heal, maybe a month that I can be able to travel. So, when I do come back here, one of the things I would like to do is just to spend one whole week with any or all of you, and we just come and discuss with you your goals, some of your short-term goals. And we discuss and try to share and try to help you in focusing on some particular things that you want to be about or you want to do, or some particular areas that you feel that you can be able to offer to Radha Damodar, offer to Prabhupada, offer to the community, offer to yourself as you're trying to purify yourself to that ultimate goal. And I want to do this not so much because of just for you to just talk with me about it, but just so that you will think more about this yourself. So you put more energy into thinking in this way and to see what options and what possibilities that are there and look a little closer at what you can actually do, because every devotee can do so many things if somehow they allow Krishna to work through them and if somehow they're honest with themselves and they'll see what they can be able to do based on what is enthusing to them within the boundaries of what is Krishna consciousness. See, there's too much sometimes hearing just surrender. Yes, but surrender is a process. We're hearing sometimes the Buddha, just do your duty. But dharma is also based on capacity and adhikar. Dharma is not just something imposed on you. As we honor dharma, then we organically, naturally embrace sanatana dharma. When too much one is just doing things, and there's not something in your life that you are excited with, then gradually your whole life is going to become a disappointment to you, and also you'll feel that you are disappointed to those who you care the most about. You have certain anxieties that will keep coming out in different ways, but the real anxiety is that you're not having anything that you have passion for. We're always crazy one way or the other. We're either crazy and intoxicated about Krishna and love of God, and we're just mad in our original nature or coming toward that, or we are crazy about some kind of sense gratification. Crazy isn't going to be there. It's a matter of which way we're going to allow that intensity to develop. And now as we begin to have more passion for certain things, based on what we are happy with and excited, then we will find that we will energize each other about what our own particular concerns and interests are. There's the converse of that. If we just do things from day to day, mechanically, almost grudgingly, we will also gradually begin to weaken each other. Because as you're around someone, whether you're in the karmic world working or you're in a devotional environment, you're around someone who really doesn't care about what they're doing, who are doing it grudgingly, who would rather not be there, then after a while, some of that consciousness is going to seep into your consciousness, and you're going to lose some of your passion, or you're going to lose the desire to try to honor a particular goal. That's why, with the sports on the Olympics, sometimes you'll find the same country will get the gold, the silver, and the bronze. Because the person who got the goal was so much passionate and such a high achiever that those who just worked around them or interact in practice with them, that person brought their level of standard up. And therefore, they all have a whole team of those who are very powerful achievers because somebody was very sick with great passion and they had the ability to encourage others about what is possible by their own example. So we are not, clones, or we are, in a cult. But if somehow we're only hearing the higher goal and not being able to focus in strategy toward that, then it'll be almost like a cult. Because we'll be intimidated that we're not reaching that higher goal, and we'll be pretending that we have that higher goal, and we'll have a lot of what we find now in ISKCON. We have people who are painting or we're desiring to do something, and they don't try to act upon it because they just feel they'll be told, "Prabhu, you are just being independent." Or, "Prabhu, you are just in Maya. Just don't think about those things. Just work." Yes, we have certain abilities and capabilities and tendencies, and we want to use those for Krishna, for community, for Guru. The Maya is when we have those and we want to use those for sense gratification, or we want to use those outside of the parameters of Krishna consciousness. It is not that there is Maya if we are trying to work for Krishna, or we are engaged in following the process of the ninefold process, because we're not always able to think of Krishna yet. Krishna himself has said, "If you can't always think of me, then you do this one, and then you do this one." But he has given us, you can't do the ultimate goal, and here's the short-term goal. Here's another bona fide short-term goal. So we don't want to connect with unbona fide ultimate goals or unbona fide short-term goals. Or do we want to minimize the fact that Krishna consciousness is very dynamic and Krishna is always active and can be more and more appreciated as we find ways to harness our minds and ways to serve him. So let me, conclude there and just summarize. So we're looking, first, before I want to read the Bhagavad Gita. We were looking in the last day or two in the folio for things about aims and about goals outside of the ultimate goal. It was quite hard, actually. It was very hard to find things in the scriptures or things the Prabhupada is saying are then the ultimate goal. Because the ultimate goal is what we're to always to keep in mind. But this thing that we realize that we do have a system, that we have Varnashram Dharma, that is given to us by Krishna himself. And we also understand that Krishna said in the 12th chapter, you can do this, you do this, you do this. So we have to remind ourselves that we should always want that ultimate goal, never minimize it or think that it's okay not to have it, but realizing that to have it, that we can honestly get it as we have some integral successes here, some achievements here, and it moves us closer toward the ultimate achievement. It keeps us focused. Here's an interesting verse. Let's see, 241. This is Bhagavad Gita 2, chapter 41. Contents of the Gita summarized. Ya vyasya yamika buddhya ekaha suranandana bahusa kahayantasya buddhaya vavasa inam. You heard it many times. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Well, I'll repeat it together. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose. Their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kuru, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. So Krishna is saying here that those who are on the path understand his purpose, are resolute, their aim is one, ultimate love of God, return back to the spiritual kingdom. Those whose intelligence is irresolute, is many-branched, and is going here, and is going there, and is getting dragged because it's being enslaved by the environment, by Maya, past conditioning, and so many other things. But as we have such aims, then even though the mind is being enticed, it will not fall prey. Let's read a little of the purport and we'll stop. A strong faith that by Krishna consciousness one will be elevated to the highest perfection of life is called Vyavyasagnika intelligence. The Chaitanya-caritamrita, Maja 22:62 states, Shraddha sabhe visvasya kahe Sujaha Nishtaha Krishna Bhakti Kala Savakama Krishna Haya. Faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. When one is engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he need not act in relationship to the material world with obligations to family, tradition, humanity, or nationality. Buddhist activities are the engagement of one's reaction from past good or bad deeds. When one is awakened to Krishna consciousness, he need no longer endeavor for good results in his activities. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, all activities are on the absolute plane, for they are no longer subject to the dualities like good and bad. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. This state is automatically achieved by progressive Krishna consciousness. So the goal is there, but it is achieved by progressive achievements, progressive successes, progressive activities that increase our faith and our determination, our belief, and enthusiasm for attaining the ultimate goal. So we talked about always thinking of, Krishna is explaining about always thinking of him. If we can't, then what we can do. We discussed about the different ways of understanding any philosophy or theology. We first look at the goal. We're happy with the goal. Then we look at what are the things to do to attain that goal. And then we try to consider and study those who have acquired that. As we look to see what we can become and now we become very excited to try to become like such persons. If we really want that goal and we are ready to do what's necessary, I'm sorry, we like those who have attained it, but we're not fully ready to do what's necessary. But this is the real goal we want. Then, of course, we should try to come as close to it as possible, or we focus more on our temporary goals, because this is the goal we really want. But if we don't really want that goal, we should be honest and then try to align ourselves with a process or lifestyle or an environment or community where those kind of goals that is ultimately presented is something we want to honor. In some cases, it may be that people are not really ready to be involved in Christian consciousness. Sometimes, some cases that actually happen. There's sometimes people who are not so much excited about the goal, certainly not excited about the things that have to be done, and do not appreciate the acharyas or those who require a particular level of success. And Christian consciousness is not really for them. They may be, might find themselves much more inspired in another situation where the goal is what they want to honor. Then we talked about the Olympic athletes. As one becomes more and more focused on certain short-term goals, become more accessible for that ultimate goal of being even the best in the world in the area. We looked at the idea of children. It's the same way that sending a child out without some goals and some guidance and some rules and some structure and, you know, and some discipline is like sending a boat out without being able to have a motor or rudders or paddles. You're sending it out for, devastation. It's going to drift and drift. To some point, you know, it's going to collapse into something. We talked about Arjuna, how he was able to shoot the eye of the bird because of his intense level of focus. And so ultimately, we want to have that level of focus, just like Sri Brahmachari, a devotee who was dumped in the river. That is the ultimate focus, Sivanagati. But if we're not able to acquire that fully, but we want it, then we do what is necessary that helps us in having some temporary successes or short-term successes, we should say, as we have the enduring success of being all for Krishna, always thinking of him, never forgetting him, and ultimately being able to come back in his association. So we want to keep in mind what is there. Acharya Maharaj wrote so nicely in his article explaining how devotees, you know, do have different propensities, and how we must keep in mind what the Krishna consciousness is, ultimately, but be honest with ourselves about what's going on in our life, what's going on in our environment, and do some things that we can do that brings us closer and closer toward the ultimate goal. This is not in any way suggesting that people should do whatever they want to do, and there's no community, there's no unity. Without some kind of teamship, nothing can be so very powerful. But it means a real powerful team is powerful because they're powerful individuals who are accessing some potency individually, and they put it all together. It's very powerful. Powerful team is not that people are just repressing and just working and not thinking and not developing and not happy about short-term goals that bring long-term goals. A powerful team, of course, not everybody abandoning accountability and responsibility. But it's about realizing that Krishna has made us, even in the spiritual kingdom, we are so different in many ways how to serve him. So maybe there's a few questions, or hopefully that our discussion is not bewildering or confusing. We're not trying to in any way propagate relativism or just the conception that we don't have an ultimate Siddhanta. We have an ultimate Siddhanta, and we acquire that by certain successes as we move towards that. So we want to use our mind and be creative about how we can, you know, give more of ourselves to Krishna. Yasoda, yes?
Hi, Dr. Gurudev. I want to thank you for this lecture. It's amazing. Every time you do this, I'm thinking of something, and then I come and sit down in the lecture, and then you just...
That means that you're the one speaking through me.
No, it's amazing.
Now we know she has liquid power.
Just
we know
power.
She has He knows he sits back there with a missing flower.
No,
he says, okay, you.
In comedy, I need a goal. That's what it is. I need to find something that infuses me. And you just came and explained everything so beautifully. And I think I was at a seminar last Monday, and somebody was standing up explaining something that was going on in his work, and he was saying that he turned to his fellow worker, and he asked him, what is it that really makes you happy in life? What is it that infuses you? And the man started crying, because nobody had ever, you know, asked him that before. And I think that's what happens with us, that we get so involved in stuff that we never really think, what is it that really makes me want to get up in the morning and, you know, approach the day and really put my everything into it? We're just mechanically, as you said, just flowing along with everything. And I think that's where I am now, is trying to really understand that, because I want to give. I think we all do, ultimately in Krishna consciousness, want to give our all. We want to give the best to Krishna. And we're not going to do that unless we're actually genuinely involved and are really enjoying what it is that we're doing. It's the same with children. Yeah. To really get the most out of a child, especially like if you're trying to teach them something, the child has to have a vested interest in that. They have to really want to do it. They have to really have some enthusiasm to do it. And then they'll just, you know, just be bubbling over. You don't have to discipline them, you don't have to shadow them, you don't have to, because they want to do it.
Mm.
And I think that's really what I'm looking at for my own self now, is really just taking this time to think about that, because it's something that I actually hadn't even thought about before, is that what is it that really inspires me?
Right.
So I don't know.
This is a good point.
Incredible.
Just to work and work and do things and do things, and not really think deeply about it or think deeply about what's going on in one's own consciousness. After a while, it just won't work. You know, there'll be a problem. Because without Ruchi, without taste, then we'll find taste in something that's outside of the boundaries of Krishna consciousness. Now, just take an example, for instance. You know, many of you know, you give classes, right? You give the Gita class, you start the Bhagavatam class. Now, notice this. Some who are more, you know, kind of mentally oriented, you may not have this problem as much, or perhaps at all. But notice that many of you have trouble, you know, just really trying to read and read. But when you have to give a class, then your mind goes deeper into what you're reading, and you're able to read something and get something out of it, because you know that you're going to have to share something. So there you have that confrontation, that you're going to be expected to share something for the class. And now the same thing that you may have read in general, and your mind may have just almost not even attuned very deeply to what you were reading, just kind of passed by somewhat and not really imbibed. But now, because you know that you're going to have to share something, then you have this goal tomorrow, you have to give class, so now you're reading it, and you find that you're getting more out of it. You see? Because you have put the mind in a situation where you have harnessed it to be, you know, be more attentive. Mind has to be accountable. So now it's looking and reading and thinking a little bit deeper about what you read, and then you're able to share something. Well, if you weren't going to give the class the next day, you read the same thing, you went through it, and wouldn't have internalized as much as you did, knowing that you were going to have to present it, you're going to have to share it. Any other questions? But you see, too, you know, children are always a good example, because they show us a little clear. Whenever we're children and we're trying to learn something, you know, just remember some teacher or some classroom or some subject matter that you actually like. Say, you know, someone likes art. Just remember how it was exciting for you when the bell rang, you could go to your art class. You know, you were so happy. And you did this and you did that because you were happy. You know, something that you like doing. But, you know, if you had trouble with math or physics or something, or history, whew. You had to go to the history class, it was like death. Walking into that room, the old teacher speaking in a monotone, you know, seemed like forever that you were in that class. And you really didn't learn much. Even if you got a good grade, you just kind of force yourself into remembering dates and remembering things, but it was boring. And so, you know, when it's something that you're excited by, you will get more into it, and you will also produce more, you will give more to the community, to your family, to yourself. That's what. Finally?
not like in history class. And if you're in school and you know you got to pass that grade, how do you get enthused about history, or how do you create a anxiety to learn history?
Well, take an actual example. Is that some kids drop out of school because they have such subjects that they're so much not into. But some kids have also those similar subjects they don't like, but they're not into it. But there are other areas that are exciting to them. And because of that, they stay in school and they graduate. So it's never that, you know, one is going to like all the things that they have to deal with or be exposed to, or things they have to learn, or things they have to do. But if there's not some areas that you really are energized with, then there's a problem. I may be, you know, a Brahmin, which I'm not, and I may have a big trouble when it comes to, you know, going out and doing, you know, cleaning the yard or washing the pots. I'm not into it, but I do it because I have some other things that I really like, and so I do those things. And I do it nicely, so I can get to those things that I really enjoy. I do those parts really wonderful, so I can go upstairs and spend 4 hours in reading or learning mantras. The danger is when I don't like the talk, I don't like cleaning outside, and I don't have any enthusiasm to read or learn mantras or anything. Doing one service or one thing after another is just a drag. And all I want to do is just run somewhere and maybe go to disco or something, because that I like to do. Yes.
Thank you, Bhakti Tirtha Swami. I was reflecting when you were talking about the goals and how the athlete, you know, sets those little goals. And my mindset has been so much concern with the big picture, trying to complete these big projects, and it's just been overwhelming. So the little things keep getting pushed aside. But when you were laying out how we have to really just look at what we're trying to do and setting the little goals, that really has helped me to think a little bit more about how I can go about doing this process. Because I'm doing what I have to do, but I'm not getting so much the sweetness or whatever, you know. So I have to, and then I find myself kind of getting into a point where I'm feeling bad about not having accomplished the things that I want to have accomplished, but haven't because it's so big. I have so much to do. So I just want to thank you because it's really given me something to reflect on like maybe even breaking down goals more on a daily basis.
Yes.
But, you know, like making some realistic strides, and that will help me hopefully in the big picture.
You know, this is an example of what you're saying, that we can have that ultimate goal or some big goal hanging over our heads to such an extent that it can feel like a failure, you know? Because that ultimate or those bigger goals seem so far-fetched. And then it can cause us to lose self-esteem and cause us to, of course, experience depression and anxiety and gloom. And it will minimize what we can do. And if we're not careful, we can get so stuck in the anxiety of not reaching that bigger goal, that'll be hard even to get out. We'll be afraid, and we'll lose confidence that it's even possible. This is why one of the other reasons why short-term goals is powerful. Because see, in one sense, anyone can do all kind of miracles and amazing things. If Krishna wants us to, we can use it. So we kind of stop ourselves. But it has to do with fear and lack of faith and so many other things. But now, as there is achievements and success, it opens the individual up. Because you know now what's possible from what has proven to be probable based on that experience. Now, the athlete who breaks the most amazing record is because they were breaking, I mean, they were achieving something, and they got a little more, and they realized that just at some point they were not able to do what they did many years ago, but by practice they were able to do it, and now they realize, okay, just as I was successful up to this point, I can now be even more successful by just continuing in some similar things that brought that success. See, there's a whole movement going on now, so, and after that, in sports, because sports has become such a difficult, I mentioned last year. Now, so many records have been broken, but people are already doing superhuman things that were considered even, you know, a decade or 2 decades ago impossible. They're breaking the records. Now, the body can only do so much, but still, records are still being broken every year. So now, they're, you know, paying millions of dollars to some of these psychologists and sports trainers who are training these athletes in a certain mental culture that has to do, you know, with visualization. It has to do with embracing the mood and the atmosphere of success, owning that, and now being able to carry that from one successful experience to another. So what is really happening is that they're helping them to realize that something has been accomplished, and you have accomplished it, and just as you have accomplished on this level, you can also accomplish more and more. And the person and our persons are doing amazing things. And a lot of those who are winning are those who have the stronger mental culture, because the skills are so similar now in a stronger mental culture. So similarly, but even in a deeper sense, that our manasseva, what is happening with the mind, is often what is going to happen to us. And this is why at a certain level in one's devotional service, and one's devotional maturity, even while we're in the physical body, we have to engage in the reflections of what we do in the spiritual world. One at a certain level of advancement is to be able to be blessed, introduced, and involved in understanding their original identity in the spiritual world, and they are beginning to interact and involve and think and reflect. Where it's becoming more and more of a part of their essence, even though they're in the material world, until it becomes their total essence. This is how powerful that the mind is. When it becomes our friend, and how dangerous it is when it's still being our enemy. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I also want to thank you, as you surely did, for such a right on the mark class for what I'm going through personally. I just thought of how our goal on Krishna consciousness is in some ways, although you've been emphasizing more the similarities to the goal setting of the Olympic athletes and that sort of thing, our ultimate goal is in some ways intangible on a material level. Like I've just been reading, maybe in a couple of different places, how the mantra that we are to meditate on for our perfection is this trinadipi samichena tadarivasitishana, that we think of ourselves as very humble, give all honor and respect to others, don't expect respect. It's such a difficult thing to do.
Very intense.
And in some ways, I think, at least I see in myself, almost a fear of having material success, that it may go to my head. I see even in Krishna consciousness, this happens to people. So can you give some clue as to short-term goals that moved in that direction, or how to balance those?
Right. It's like the last prayer. I don't know the Christian, my Lord, and he always remains such, anything kind of roughly. I mean, that's a pretty intense goal. You always remain my worshipful Lord, you know. He can handle me as he wants, and even roughly, and it's okay. We're saying every day, but we're trying to move, of course, towards that. And your point is very profound. More than not, it happens a lot, that people are afraid of failure, but they're also, you know, afraid of success. See, the subconscious mind is more powerful than the conscious mind. And so the conscious mind and the words and actions may be about certain things, but the subconscious mind is saying no, it will win over. And so there are times when there are people, and even devotees, that fail or run away from something or do not do as much as they can in some areas that's natural for them that they could do, because they're afraid of success and what that may mean. But see, as we are thinking more and more short-term as well as long-term, then we have less fear, because we're looking now more at achieving certain things that we are happy about and not looking so much at what that is going to mean later. And we kind of work ourselves into it until we're able to attain that, you know, that bigger goal. So that means just be a little more focused in thinking, although there are so many complexities and difficulties, that the process is really simple. Is that it's all about what's going on in the mind. And it's all about the mind gradually becoming a friend, where we become the deepest lover. And the mind not being afraid to be a deep lover. The mind not being afraid of being distracted, you know, by the different allurements. So we realize, so whether I have money or don't have money, whether I have good health or don't have good health, whether I'm doing this big project or just something very simple, or just reading or just praying, that really, this is what it's really about. It's about that whatever's going on, I'm supposed to be somehow excited about becoming involved and embraced by Krishna's love. And whatever's going on, I'm supposed to somehow just remind myself that Krishna has picked me up so many lifetimes to bring me to this point. And in this lifetime, if I can just get the proper mental culture, then the last layers will be removed. And Krishna, who is reaching out for me all the time, he is so happy that I've gotten this close, and just hoping that I don't lose determination while I've gotten so close to him. Like that. Yeah, we have to stop complicating it so much. Even though we have to do many things, we have to realize, hey, it really isn't about that I have to, you know, do so many things. I have to build so many projects. I have to know so many slokas. I have to do so many of this or so many of that. I have to chant 64 rounds a day. It's not really about that. It's going to really connect me with Krishna. It's that I'm already connected with Krishna. And now I have to just see how to get rid of this illusion. That the goal that I really want is what I already have. And that biggest goal is what I already have. But now I have to remind myself and become sane by some of the shorter term goals, so that I can realize that this big goal is really what I'm really about, because I actually already have it. Any last question? Well, let me end there. We're giving these kind of classes because it is becoming a little more difficult based on the environment, you know. And that's why I gave the workshop yesterday, is that there's more of a culture of fear that's sweeping the planet. If all this is going on in the international arena, all the changes that's happening with the government, the people are just so much more in fear, the economy is shifting. And so this is going to accelerate a culture of fear. It's going to let Maya come in more ways, just all over the planet. And so to replace that or to counteract that, there's a need for a greater sense of love. Because as much as there's only these two emotions that's going on. And so when we are able to harness the mind better, then more of our love comes out, because we're feeling better, we're excited, we're more happy about who we are and what we're becoming. And then we begin to experience more of the calling of the pool, the wonderful pool, you know, that's bringing us in. But when we're not harnessing the mind sufficiently, then what happens is that the tapes and the music from previous in this life and previous lifetimes just start playing and playing. And we start hearing, you know, that music. And even though we are acting in a different way, but because the subconscious mind is more connected with those old tapes, that we'll just get zapped and overcome, you know, by this noise that's going on, by those previous tapes, those previous attachments, and previous distractions. See, what's going to be amazing for all of us one day, when we are back in the spiritual world, we're going to look back at ourselves and we're going to think, it was worth it, and it really wasn't that hard. But while we were undergoing it, it seems like, whew, very difficult, you know, impossible, too far away, impractical. And then we're going to look and think, wow, all we really had to do was just be like this. All we had to do was just, you know, position ourselves a little like this, and the help was always there. All we had to do was just, you know, remain a little more determined. Because we were thinking that, you know, material time was like so long, and all the time we've been in the material body in this lifetime, just like a few days in the spiritual world, and we realized, wow, we were thinking that it was like a long time, it was impossible, and now it's all over, and we realized it was just a matter of like a bad nightmare, or, you know, a daydream that just went a little too long. Confounded Sadhu Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Nityananda Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaurvani Pracharine Nivitasasungivari Paskasadi Sutarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya